and welcome back to The Therapy Show. This is The Therapy Show, episode 9, I want to say. We had a little time off, a couple of weeks there. We had a wedding, and also Wendy getting settled in her new land of Sweden. How's that going for you?
It's going well.
Yeah. Last time you were here, you were in studio, and now you're physically across the world. You're somewhere else.
I am. Yeah. I'm wondering for people, if they just listened to episode 8.
Yeah.
Did I sound really stressed and like...
I listened to it to go back and listen to it. And I do that sometimes with shows just to kind of do quality checks and see how I'm doing and all that. And you sounded totally normal. Yeah, I don't think you sounded stressed at all.
Right.
In fact, you sounded like you had not... The word isn't given up, but you sounded like you had resigned yourself to what the next few weeks might be.
Yeah, that is awesome that I pulled that off because I really think I blew a few... fuses in my brain. I've never experienced stress like that in my life.
I could tell, like, outside of us recording, I could tell it was a gnarly time, but I don't think really anybody could tell on the show.
Well, and now, and this is what I want to know, is the difference is I have such a peaceful existence.
Do you feel way more chill now? Is that the deal?
Yeah. I mean, I'm hanging all my laundry to dry and I'm cooking every night. Like, we sit down by a roaring fire and have this because, A, we can't afford to eat out.
Yeah, sure. plus eating out for you is like an hour away if you want to go and do anything, right?
No. And it's like any kind of quick food here is just... It's gross hamburgers, right? Attempts at, I mean, even McDonald's here. McDonald's is gross everywhere. No offense, McDonald's fans, but it's slightly better, but it's still like, so anything that you don't want to spend more than $50 on for the family, right? That's good food, but
Look at you guys in your little Swedish cottage doing your
doing our cheap food.
Nightly thing. Food. Well, that's great. Now, when you left though, there was a lot of stuff that was sort of up in the air, right? Like, there were things you weren't sure were going to be settled before you got there.
Yeah.
And it turns out a ton of it wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
Now that you're there, though, and that stuff's kind of, has passed and you're sort of settled in.
Home.
Yeah. I mean, does it feel like home? Do you feel comfortable enough to say, I'm barring all your extended family? I mean, does it feel like you're home now?
Yeah. Yeah. In a weird kind of way. Yes. Like, I keep finding some similarities between the Swedes and, of course, a lot of people in Utah are from Sweden, way back.
Yeah.
There's a lot of genetic lineage there. And so some of my, connections that I've made is everyone sings here. Everyone.
Really?
Everyone's musical, has great voices. Yeah. I mean, if you look at just that, I mean, it's a country of 9 million people, and look how many bands have come out of here that are extremely successful.
That's true, yeah. You see this happen in that, like, places like that, in Australia and New Zealand, just like these places with smaller overall populations.
Right.
Like, should not have this crazy ratio of creative people. It's weird.
So they're just good singers. And there's a lot of good singers in Utah, in the Mountain West. There's a lot of what. And then here's the next one. Sweet tooth. I thought I'd come to Europe and we'd all lose some weight. Mm-hmm.
No, they invented the stuff, dude.
Dang. They have what's called fika every 10 a.m. and 2 a.m. I know, doesn't it? Right. I think the same thing you just thought. But anyway, it is like a cinnamon roll, like a Cinnabon with sugar so big you can see it on top.
Wow.
And they're really good. And then coffee usually. And it's twice a day. I mean, think about that. You're eating like a giant Cinnabon twice a day.
How is the whole population not just big rotund cinnamon?
No, that's the difference. They still ride their bikes everywhere and they're still, for the most part, pretty healthy. But they're worried, right?
Yeah.
They're all like, we got to stop. We're going to turn into Americans. That's the other funny thing is how much American we're fat and we're...
Oh, they get all the stereotypes, sure.
Yeah, that we're fat, but they're also... What they love about us is that we're so open. You hear that a lot.
Oh, really?
Just so open and warm and...
This is interesting because that makes me wonder. I've always wondered why we have such a large contingent of listeners in Sweden for the shows I do. Always have, since the beginning. And I've never really kind of been able to put my finger on it. Maybe they appreciate the openness of the things I do. Maybe that's it.
Right. Then there's another part to Swedes that is... really fascinating to me. No subject is taboo. Mm. Like, they are going to talk. Like, I have a friend who has a board game, and it's all about, like, the steps are toilet paper rolls, and your little turds, your little guys are turds, and you're taking them to the toilet, and that's the final, that's how you win.
That's weird.
And I was like, is my brother in this game? Like, so they, at the same time, sex and boobs and whatever, like, none of this is taboo. So interestingly, I think you probably are, you know, speak to the very open, talk about whatever, mm-hmm. but then so do they, but they don't do it unless they've known you for 20 years. I mean, there's more of a warming up that takes a while.
Oh, I see.
So I can see that. Yeah. And they also, the other thing is, and I know this isn't true everywhere, and listeners, don't worry. You don't need to tell me that there are baby carrots in Sweden. I just couldn't find them.
Yeah, hard
but
to
anyway,
find. Sure.
Yeah. But that, I swear there's 3 radio stations and they only have the rights to 5 songs that they play over and over and over again. Because Sweden is, and this explains it, the number one country in the world for illegal downloads. And there's a reason, people.
Because there's
nothing
no choice.
To listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
But Spotify is from here. So Minecraft, there's a lot of really amazing stuff that comes out of a country that has 9 million people.
Minecraft, Spotify, and IKEA. Those are your big 3
IKEA,
experts. Yeah.
ABBA, come on.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they
ABBA,
are
sure.
just the friendliest when you talk to them and they talk back. They're just... They have delightful sense of humor, all of them. They're all very, very nice.
Yeah.
But it really is interesting. So today I was talking to a woman who does, I know everyone's like, I'm not listening to this to hear about Sweden.
Don't worry. We got a topic, guys. We got a topic.
Too bad. Yeah. Anyway, I met with this woman about one of my kids' schooling situation and what have you.
Mm.
And I have a terrible story I could tell you on Therapy Thursday. I won't share it here. But,
we'll save it, yeah.
About one of my children in Sweden.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm meeting with this woman and we start to talk about the differences in the American education versus Swedish.
Yeah.
And that she's just so nice. And at one point I was kind of saying, well, so I'm not used to having a lot of choice in America without having to pay a lot of money to have a choice. Or
But choice meaning not public school or whatever.
Public school, yeah. Public or private or what my child has a right to or not.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of smiling. And then at the end she says, it's a different value set. You guys value individuality.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of getting ahead and, you know, and there's a cost individually that you have to pay to, you know, get some of that. And here our value is a society as a whole.
Yeah.
And so we look at all children that they all need to get what they need. And so, you know, it's interesting because in theory that you need that mentality to have Sweden run the way it's run. Of course, there's going to be people who don't love it.
Yeah. Well, there's always some balance that isn't working for somebody. I mean,
yes. But I'll tell you what a pleasant surprise it is to have, you know, people care about your child's abilities and rights and access.
Yeah. Not like
more than you do.
There is a sense, yeah. There's a sense that you've got kids, your kids are in the DMV all day here, and that it's just push them through. It would be nice if there was a bit more. I mean, it's a thing that we have discovered with private schools and charter schools, but they're expensive as hell. It's this thing you got to pay all this extra cash for.
Right. And then if you take all the money out, you know, if the money follows the child, then they're going to end up taking all the money to these other places. And then the public school, when there are kids who are never going to go anywhere but the public school, get the shaft.
Yeah.
And that's the opposite here. There's no kid that will get the shaft because they are a culture of, you know, each other, not.
So an actual no child
matters.
Left behind.
Yeah. Literally no child left behind. Even if you got to tax themselves to death to do it, they will.
They will. Yeah. What is it, like 60% or something? Yeah.
I think it's 50.
Is it? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. We're not that far behind, strangely enough.
Yeah. Exactamundo. Unless you are a hedge fund manager, then you get 15%.
Well, you get all kinds of cool breaks.
Yeah.
If you're smart. Hey, if you run a podcast network, turns out there's all kinds of tricks you can play.
Yeah, because it's not a real job.
Well, I'll tell you what is a real job. A real job in this world, in this society, no matter where you live, is that of a in-law. So I had this. Let me segue this with a story. It's not long, but we were at Taylor's wedding, the reception part of the wedding, which was a week ago tomorrow. Feels like forever ago. But anyway, we were there, and this very nice neighbor of mine who makes wedding cakes professionally was hired by Taylor to do the wedding cake. And she did a freaking amazing wedding cake. I don't want to even get into the cake because it was so freaking good. You would have died. Anyway, Oh, the lemon part. Anyway, so it was so good.
Oh, I love lemon.
It was so good. That's a Johnson thing. I could eat lemon anything.
Yeah, I think it might be Swedish too.
You could spray lemon pledge in my mouth and I would be happy to take it.
Uh-huh. Me too.
It's crazy. Gross. Anyway, so it is gross and not good for you. So don't do that at home, kids. But so she says to me, she walks up and she grabs my arm, and I've talked to her here and there, but I don't know them that well. We're definitely neighborly and they've known, we know them and all that. But she walks up to me and she puts her hand on my arm. She goes, "I love the therapy show." And I went, "Oh, another person who listens." And I got to think real quick. Did I say anything that would offend anyone?
Oh,
that,
the pressure.
That whole thing. So, she was super, super nice. And she was telling me all the things she liked about it. And she goes, "Can you guys please do something on in-laws? Because mine is driving me crazy," she says. Now, I'm not going to use names here, obviously, because I don't want her to get in trouble with her in-laws. But it does seem to be. It's funny because she said it during a atmosphere where I am mindful also of in-laws and how that's working.
Right.
New in-laws coming into the family, us coming into theirs, my continued struggles and delight with my in-laws, because it's a little
and
of both.
Delight.
Yeah, a little bit of both. I don't want to say it's all one-sided, but right. And Kim's own issues with her in-laws, everyone has them. So. Right. I got to thinking after she said that A, I'd like to fulfill her wish and give her an episode about this, but two, and by the way, if only for that lemon part of that cake, if that's the only reason I do this, because it was so freaking good. But also it kind of perplexes me as a whole, because the stereotypes are obvious. They're in movies. They're everywhere about, the mother-in-law, the whatever, right? But you never really think about, is that based on some truth? And as it turns out, it really is based on a lot of truth. Most people have some kind of struggle. I don't want to blanket this, but it seems like a lot of people. Now, there are those exceptions, like, me and my mom-in-law get along great. We go out every week. It's a wonderful experience. She's the best. She's better than my real mom. I know that happens. Yeah, but I think on the whole, there's something weird happens when you try to mesh families together. Someone new comes in and takes your daughter or son and marries them and takes them away from your dynamic and introduces new dynamics. Why is that? And how does one deal with it? Because it's real rough for newlyweds. And even for some of us oldlyweds, it still kind of sucks down the road.
Right.
You know?
Right. So there's a lot going on that we can talk about, lots of things. So steer me where you want me to go. Let me just do this caveat. Since being in Sweden, I'm hyper aware of how American studies are, right? And how culturally specific they might be. You and I talked about, maybe it was on one of these shows, or now I don't have to worry about revealing stuff from the past episodes because they're already out.
They're already in the wild. There's zip you can do about it. Yep.
Yeah, I should already have listened. that study about people shocking themselves rather than sitting just still in a room for 20 minutes.
It was on here. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So I was talking to some Swedes about that and they were laughing and like, oh my gosh, no way. And so we're just talking about it. And like in the middle, it dawns on me like, oh my gosh, those are Americans that were doing that. Cause would a Swede do that? And a few of them were like, I might be curious and maybe do it once. I don't know. And I was sort of getting their opinions and I'm like, maybe this is not cross-cultural, you know?
Yeah.
So the in-law thing, it's very possible. This is not a thing other places. I know there's many cultures where, you're living in the same house.
Yeah, like Indian culture, you are there for good and your mother-in-law lives with you forever. And then your grandmother and then whoever dies, whoever's next, you're all in that house forever. Yep.
And I think there would be some honest, sharing of it's difficult. But I also think it has a little bit to do with expectation.
Mm.
They see that person as their mother maybe, or it becomes a totally different thing. Culturally, we can't sort of fathom. So let's start with the cultural specific of an American, because this woman is American. I assume that.
Yes, she is American. And yes. And by and large, if you do the total numbers, most people who listen to the show and have supported it are American. Yes.
Got it. But just know people in Iceland and Norway and whatever, I got your back. Yeah. Okay.
This may sound weird to all of you. Who knows?
Yeah, I know. And they may be like, nope, it's the same. I think it's more in those, in the cultures that the living situations might be different, whether it's expected and it's very generational and that type of thing. Yeah. Okay. So, and there's a couple pieces to this. One is that as a very individualistic society, we have our ideas of how things are done, right? And we kind of do whatever, and then we get married. And then suddenly everything I learned at home, the way my mom cooks something, the way my dad took care of the car, notice this is an issue, the way, you know, whatever it is, you bring that to this new relationship without having thought that there was another way potentially. Most people are like, yeah, it's just how life is. It's how I grocery shop. This is how I spend money. This is how I do whatever. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you're joining forces with somebody who has a similar view of their own background. Some may say, oh, I hate how I was raised, but that doesn't mean it's not impacting how they're behaving either, right? Mm-hmm. So they join together and now becomes the, how do we deal with the fact that we both have totally different backgrounds in certain areas? So neighbors, people who have grown up next to each other can get married and still have this exact same dynamic.
Yeah.
Because it's different families, they do different things. And so the key, I think, for anybody, and I'll get to her point, which is she's been married probably for a while and is struggling with this in sort of the later frame of time versus the very newlyweds. But if you start as a newlywed, it's such a better place to start.
Yeah.
Like anything, you know. Anyway, but this idea is when you get together and you start to hear words from each other like, well, my mom used to do it like this. Mm-hmm. Or my, no. You're going to get what you're really saying is, wow, I'm not used to this. And you do it a different way. And hey, before when we were like madly in love, we didn't have to communicate about anything hard except, you know, what flavor cake to get for our wedding.
All right.
And now we're talking about fundamentally, you know, how we're going to load the dishwasher.
Sure.
Or whatever.
All the basics. But it's not just where are we going to school or how many kids are we going to have or the big giant, you know, what house are we going to buy? It's not the big decisions necessarily. It's also, why are your drapes green when they should be brown or, you know.
Right. And why do you put your butter in the fridge? It's supposed to be on the counter. Or, I mean, just
toilet paper
weird
direction, all that stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So, but think, and I'm going to ask you, what is at the core of that? Why, when two people get together and they have different patterns of living and behavior, why is this even related to in-laws?
That's a good question. I think it's, I don't know. Like, I guess that's what I've been trying to wrap my head around it because I've seen some of this going on with the injection of in-laws on both sides.
Yeah.
With Taylor's whole situation, but also having dealt with it myself. I don't know if it just boils down to you're not, I say outwardly, like somebody might say outwardly, let's just use a generalized family here. So I'm not going to be specific here, but somebody says, hey, yeah, I really like you a lot. I'm saying that out loud and I think you're great, but deep down, I'm not sure I trust you, or I'm not sure you're good for my daughter or good for my son or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Or you don't have the same standards that I worked so hard my entire life to instill into my son or daughter. And therefore you are going to be a corrupting influence. Even if you never say those words, that might be what you're thinking. And so I feel like what causes somebody to go into a new relationship and say, well, I don't think taking the garbage out once a week is a good idea. My dad always told me to do it twice a week or something. That's a bad example. But if they're doing that, what they're doing is saying to the spouse or to the other person, forget whatever you learned. I've just invalidated it because my parents taught me the better way.
Right.
And then that just extends up to the in-laws. Everything's the better way.
People may not be saying, my dad told me to do it this way, but they might. And if you're saying it out loud, well, you know, then maybe it's even a little more honest, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm doing what my parents did, as opposed to what it really core boils down to is there's going to be conflict when two people live together, no matter what. Right. But suddenly we have a dynamic where you are considered married. You started your own new nuclear family and you are figuring out how to do it certain ways. And at its core, it's pride, right? At its core, it's my way is better than your way, or wait, you're forcing me to change or be flexible or compromise. And so at its core, you have those feelings, and at its core, that's what it actually extends to the in-laws. There's competition over Christmas Day, right? Yeah. If you have two families living in the same city, yeah. What do you do about Christmas Day?
This is already coming up, by the way.
Yeah. So now you have these experiences where it's extending from the core conflict of compromise within the married couple, because now we got 7 or 8 other people we have to please, mm-hmm. not just the two figuring out the compromise.
Right.
And that will inevitably, well, okay, there's some things you can do to prevent this from becoming a problem. And that is a couple basic things is to change your mindset or create your mindset. You create your mindset that is you are now a unit and you cannot divide your loyalties. It cannot be for your wife most of the time, but then with your mother when it comes to A, B, or C.
Yeah.
It cannot be, because what ends up happening, this is a constant I find in my practice, that they get in a fight and she calls mom and vents all about it. Well, guess what you just did? You just told your mother any reservations she ever had, which maybe she didn't even tell you about, are confirmed, that he's kind of a dirtbag and not good enough for her baby. And then what happens is you get off the phone and you feel better. Like, oh, my mom's great. Mm-hmm. And then your husband comes home that night, you work it out and you have sex. And then you're like, he's great. But guess what you don't do? You don't call your mom back and say, we totally made up and we're doing awesome. He really is wonderful.
Yeah.
And even if you did do that, she doesn't believe you. She hears, oh, I'm glad. But what she has, what you've done is created more defensiveness on her part, which in turn makes her act weirder.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
She's already going to act weird, but now she's going to act even weirder. So you can behave in ways as members of the couple that can really make this a problem. One is involving them in disputes that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to rely on each other, and then sort of that dividing of loyalties. Right.
Yeah.
The other thing is creating boundaries. This is what, everybody has to learn. You can start with, oh, it's so fun. We always get together and it's loving and warm and cozy and it's all great. And then you sort of like, well, we should probably do our own thing or maybe get our own friends or get a life or whatever. And then you start to set some boundaries about how you spend your time or what you're going to do. And now suddenly, well, you don't like us anymore or whatever weird dynamic that creates.
Yeah.
So maybe very early on, decide how you're going to spend your time with your families.
Mm.
It might be that you decide, you know what, Thanksgiving is our holiday and we'll get together with you on that Sunday rather than on Thursday because I play football and I sit around in my underwear, whatever.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Yeah. So that may not come as quickly because you need some time to be together to sort of realize what that looks like. Those who, you know, are together for a long time before they're actually married,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're pretty well seasoned into it, what it might be like. And don't fool yourself that suddenly being married is going to change your in-laws.
No, hell no.
No, probably makes it worse. Anyway, so there's that boundaries, sort of the idea of good fences make good neighbors, right? Yeah. They need to respect your time and you respect theirs, right?
Sure.
You've gone from being entitled little boogers, right? Your parents paid for that wedding or your parents, you know, helped you through college or whatever your parents have just done for you. And now suddenly you're like, all right, peace out. And I'm on her team. And, you know, they're still tied to that a little bit. So maybe being a little bit gentle when you do these boundaries, but really think it through and maybe talking about it with them about what they find is appropriate.
So when you got, let me ask you this. So if you're growing up in a family, I mean, there's so many dynamics here. Like, let's say you're in a single parent home. Dad left when you were 4 or something. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a complete made up scenario. Nobody out there listening needs to wonder if I'm talking about them. I don't know why I'm so sensitive to that lately, but I'm just trying to make sure people know I'm not dragging their name through the dirt. But let's say that that's the thing. And let's say because of that, you've got this very hardworking mother who's very concerned about everybody involved and wants their kids to just do the best they can and survive this and not be a broken family and honest, yeah. and make a truly honest best make of it possible. Then comes the time when this kid is now grown. He's in his 20s. He's getting married. inherently, because of that relationship and how hard that mom tried to not control, because it's that sounds pejorative, but just tried to mold everybody so carefully for their benefit, right. Not because she was selfish or anything like that, but for their benefit, to give them the best chance they could have. Now that they've got their chance, it seems like it's very hard for that mom to break the dynamic, to say, right. Oh, shoot, now is the time for me to let go and not try to run everything still. But the instinct is so strong and so present and so protective and all those things. I don't know how they shake it. And maybe this gives, I hope by me asking that or bringing this up, two things happen. People who deal with a mother-in-law like that might have a little bit more understanding from where the mother-in-law might be coming from, and that where her motivations might be may not be as sinister as you think. Right. But also to the people who are being that mom, to help them see kind of that there is this time they have to let that thing go. That apron, you know, the old apron strings joke is a real deal. You know, that's a freaking bond that's hard to cut, especially if you spent many of the kids' formative years being a director really of feasible. Everything they did. Yeah. So how do you do that? Because that's what, I mean, that's a lot of people.
It is. And it represents so much loss for that mother, or a father could be in the same exact situation.
Sure.
There's so much loss of this person now talks to, relies on, trusts this other person. And they may really want that for their child. Like, this is the right thing. This is the best step. But it doesn't mean there's not a gaping hole left, because there will be, especially if they were very loyal to each other, which, you know, is common in families that, you know, really have stuck together. You know, there are some who, you know, their families aren't even invited to the wedding. And so they're going to hear this and be like, yeah, nothing. It means nothing.
But, no big deal,
but you have kind of the polar opposite, which is a very enmeshed family is the term we would use psychologically, or fused, that, you know, all good intentions, but really interwoven. And that is not easy to overcome. So I have a sort of, my number one advice is don't live in the same town as the mother for some period of your married life, hopefully early on.
Yeah.
Because what you'll do, and this is true for every couple, and in this case, maybe specifically, is to really force yourself to lean on each other. You need to have no one else you can lean on, right? Yeah. You really do turn towards each other. And you can ask any couple who's done this. It really makes a difference. Not everyone needs it, but you know, I think it strengthens even a strong couple, but I also think it can be really imperative for some who are very attached to their mothers. Right. Adam and I had this rule, if we ever asked anyone to dinner or to hang out and they said, oh, we have dinner with our families, that we'd never ask them again because they weren't that interesting to us. Like, okay, you're one of those. All right. Bye-bye. You know, like we just, that wasn't all that exciting. Right. But people who had ever lived away and, you know, they'd come back or, you know, and they would have dinner with their family, it would be more reasonable, like once a month or, you know, when we get together, they found a way to balance. And that, this is the thing, is we want, no one wants to be the bad guy, right? No one wants to say, hey, here's my boundary. My boundary is that we do Halloween without our extended family. Yeah. When Halloween is, you know, mother-in-law Mary's all-time favorite thing, and you are literally crushing her soul by doing that.
Yeah.
You have to at some point have the courage. And there's a secret to this, is you have to figure out, first of all of this before you say anything to your parents. The two of you, the two people in the couple have to be on the same page and not just assume the other person agrees or that logically.
Get you in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to talk about it.
Those are some bad rides home on a Sunday evening.
Oh, yeah.
When you're done with that. Yeah. You don't want to be caught in the middle of that mess. Be unified, gosh dang it.
And if you do, then figure it out for the next time. Cool down, have a conversation. Like, don't just let it go till the next stupid holiday and have the same thing happen again. I had one couple where he would just leave
really?
The party. Yeah, he would take a bus. He would take an extra car. He wouldn't even tell her. It was her family. They'd all get together. It was very loud. He was like one of two kids or something, so it was pretty quiet in his gatherings, and hers was like seven kids or something.
Sure.
And so grandkids and people everywhere. And he literally disappear.
Yeah.
And I don't, and then they would never speak of it again. Clearly they needed some therapy.
That seems bad.
Yeah, really bad. So anyway, so there's talking about it. It's really, really important. There is another thing that, you know, you sort of have to, do is tell them. So you got to sit down. Your parents are not as fragile as you think, but there is something really key to this. And that is you are whoever has the primary relationship. So like me with my mom, yeah. Adam with his mom,
yeah.
That's who does the talking.
Yeah.
You cannot have the in-law be like, we're going to set some boundaries.
Oh now. My gosh. Even just hearing you say that sounds wrong. You know, like hearing an in-law take charge of that. Ugh.
It's going to backfire in a major
I've
way.
I've seen it backfire. Like I've seen right. that go down and you're like, oh no, that was the wrong. Yes. We shouldn't have done right. it that way. Oof.
And there's another part to this that I think is kind of helpful. And that is don't criticize your partner's relationship with their family.
Yeah.
So if they're scared to tell their moms what the boundaries is, don't make fun of them. Don't be like, come on, you got to do this. I mean,
you never tell your mom no or whatever.
Yeah. You know, you have to be really careful about that because what you're going to do is maybe increase the clinginess they're already feeling.
Yeah.
Or the the complications of, well, my loyalties are being tested and here's this person sort of making, I mean, no one calls my mom a snowblower, but me, right?
Yeah.
So if your spouse is saying, well, your mom, I mean, no one wants to hear that. So Scott, you and I,
yeah.
Everyone else out there, Scott and I grew up with a dad who would lovingly refer to our mom as Dolores yeah. every once in a while. Yeah,
which is his mother-in-law.
Which is his mother-in-law when she would behave similarly. So let me just say, Apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Adam will call me Donna every once in a while. If I do something that seems something, you know, maybe it's critical or emotional or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Mom, if you're listening, we love you. It's the, you know.
This is the dynamic. This is, we're just, yeah, these are the truths of it.
It is. It is. And so, you know, we joke about it, but dad did that as like, without having to say you're acting like your mother or, you know, you some kind of criticism of her, he would just say, don't be so negative. And then he would call her Dolores, yeah. which makes me laugh.
Don't be so negative, Dolores, he'd say.
Don't be so damn negative. Yeah. That was the
damned negative, he'd say. Yep.
But I never heard anything beyond that. So I don't know if that's even safe.
Yeah. Well,
maybe you shouldn't call them by their name. But there is you've got to find a way to talk about it that is safe for both of you. But if you're criticizing that relationship or you're criticizing how they're handling things or you're criticizing that their mother specifically, you're going to be in trouble.
Well, so I'll tell you how my little keyword in our relationship goes like this. So Kim's mom, she goes by Mima. It's a Southern thing. You know, everybody down there's got weird grandpa, grandma names. And she's from the Deep South. And so everyone, all the grandkids call her Mima. And some of the adults even do, because that's just their role now. So it's Mima and Ponka. And yeah, I call her Mama because I've heard that before in some movie with some Southern. And she hates it. She hates it. She thinks that makes her sound older than Mima does. And it's not her chosen weird nickname. So I'll do it just to annoy her. Well, at home, if something's going weird and I start to sense a little bit of going down the road that she would, the way she would do things,
yeah. Like
dad would say, come on, Dolores. I go, guys, let's not go full Meemaw here. And that really, I mean, Kim, it drives her crazy. I really shouldn't do it, but occasionally I will do it. I think everybody's got some form of this. And for the other side of it, let me throw out this metaphor before you continue, because I got to get out of my head. It's killing me here. Let's imagine. So this is for all you dudes. You're looking for a good metaphor on how this must feel, because it does seem like oftentimes it's the mother-in-law we're talking about.
Right.
It's sometimes the father-in-law, but most of the time, mother-in-law. That's just, it's not just the stereotype. I think that's just the truth. And, knowing that if you're a dude, here's a good metaphor for you. Let's say you're working on like some 57 Chevy mint condition. It was given to you. You were lucky to get it. And you're going to spend the next 20 years or so grooming that car, slowly putting it together, putting new stuff on it, cleaning up rust, fixing problems. You're going to make this thing cherry by the time it's 20, 22 years later after you got it. And it's just this sweet car. And then one day somebody comes by, whether you like it or not, and says, all right, I'm taking that car. And don't worry. I'll take good care of it. I'll take really good care of it. It's going to be awesome in my keeping. Don't worry. Your car is in good hands. But I might drive it in ways that you won't like, or I might, you know, park it funny. And I might do some things you're not going to be totally happy with, but I'm still taking the car and there really is nothing you can do about it. And the guy has to just let him take the car.
Yep.
Now, how impossible would it be for that guy not to at least be nervous, frustrated, not being able to not say anything if he sees the guy hit, you know, rub the bumper up against the curb? He's going to say something. He can't not say something because it's his baby. He built that thing. Yeah. That's how moms feel, I think.
That's a great analogy.
I think it's as close as you get, because I was trying to think of another good one and I can't think of any other one. But to me, that seems like that's what they're going through, because in a very real way, they're giving up a thing that they have meticulously cared for for a long time. And it has so much value to them that isn't monetary. It's all these other values. It'd be easier almost if it was like, you know, another scenario might be, well, I built this company for 30 years and now Google's going to buy it from me. Well, the advantage there is you just got $2.5 billion. You can walk away.
This the mother-in-law got nothing.
No, mother-in-law gets zip. It gets zip. So imagine giving that car away for free. I mean, that's kind of what you've done. And you're just hoping the new owner takes care of it. It's never simple.
Yeah, it's never simple. And I'm going to say, you know, taking care of a car or cleaning up explosive diarrhea in a graveyard. Oh, I did that the other day.
What?
Yeah. Pete filled his boots, dude. It was the sickest.
Swedish
food.
And
when I'm cleaning him up, I'm literally laid him down on a grave. Not like on a stone or anything, but like I'm in a graveyard because I'm walking through the graveyard to get back to my car. Mm. It was so gross. And I remember thinking, I think this is love times 4 million. Like normally you just walk away from this. Like you would not get near this. It was unreal. Anyway, yes, you give everything and suddenly it's gone. Sorry to hijack your
story. No. I like it because you're explaining part of what's the intangible part, which is it's not just that, oh, that was gross and hard to deal with. It's that you love the kid enough that you do deal with it, and you deal with it in the most efficacious motherly way possible. So you have just put a new fender on the fancy car. I mean, you really have. You really have.
And that fender will fall off a week later because then they do this other thing. Yeah, I mean, there's a futility to motherhood that I think the car analogy misses of, you know, it just never is done. So then here in theory, your child is married and off to go to the next stage and they're done in theory. But then you got to spend the next 50 years watching them, or 30 or 10 or however old you are, watching them screw up with their own kids, mm-hmm. or have a marriage that's not great, or make stupid decisions. And, you know, it's just easy to blame the son-in-law.
Right.
It's easy to see his influence as opposed to that's just real life. So your car analogy is actually really great for advice for the in-law. Mm. And that is, if that's my car and someone just takes my car and says they're going to take good care of it, you know what I would do? I would stop watching it. I would have to turn away when I see things that are not good, and figure out a new way to have a relationship with that car. Now, that's obviously doesn't extend to, you're going to love your daughter and you're going to, you know, interact with her, but you can't have all of the cards still in that child. There has to be some letting go, right?
Yeah.
And the mother-in-law's that's particularly difficult because there's the interaction might be around, again, that those core basic things of like, how do we cook a meal? How do we celebrate a holiday? You know, women tend to be the gatherers and they tend to make sure everyone's fed and they tend to create traditions, right? And fathers do this too. But then suddenly a new family has to create its own thing. So it feels like your traditions don't matter or they don't mean as much. And so you can get offended constantly. So you have to find a way to turn away. Mm. Like, just stop watching them scratch the fender. You have to stop believing you're still the dog in the fight because you're not.
Yeah.
Which is a call for have your own good marriage, for crying out loud. Have your own things you're doing that are meaningful and valuable to you. So there's some balance. If everything is about your child or grandchild, you know, you're going to be, it's going to be tricky because you care too much. You're going to make more mistakes. So I have a great analogy with my mother-in-law. She is a very capable human being.
Sure.
She has, raised 7 very successful children. Adam's the worst of all of them, by the way.
And that's funny. Cause I consider Adam to be very successful. Yeah.
He's great. But he's the black sheep for sure. And he
it's so funny.
He's so great with her because he just doesn't put up. She can be kind of passive aggressive and he just doesn't put up with it. So the whole family will be having some conversation and she'll say something that's very passive aggressive. And he'll be like, "Okay, mom, that's BS. Say what you mean." And the whole room's like, like so awkward. Yeah. And of course I think they all think, oh, it's because he married a therapist, but it's really just him sort of, he still has his unique relationship with his mom that he loves her to pieces, but he also, you know, has to keep some boundaries for himself regardless of me. Right. So she really is very capable. So what she tends to do is she has great ideas, and how it comes across is your idea is stupid because my idea is great. Right. And that can be pretty intimidating. Are you there?
I'm here. Oh, I'm still here.
Oh, God. You said I'm riveted. So quiet.
I'm riveted.
You should be riveted. This is
I am. It's
so
intense
exciting.
Business going on right now.
Anyway, so I have figured her out. So all of my sister-in-laws are lovely, lovely people, but their spouses and brothers-in-law, I should say, their spouses are, Adam's siblings are so nice about her. They will not talk bad about her, will not let anyone else complain about her. They're just very kind and like, nah. And Adam is like, let's talk about how crazy she acted at Thanksgiving dinner. So I have this sort of free pass that he and I can process what happened or what weirdness is going on or whatever.
Yeah.
With the caveat that we are not unkind, but that we are sort of analyzing the situation and then what is our best behavior here. Mm-hmm. So a perfect example is she always has these great ideas. And if she comes to visit and you don't have anything for her to do, she doesn't do well. So we figured out a couple things. You give her a project. She loves projects. She can do a million things. So I had her recover all of my lawn furniture.
Oh my gosh, this is great.
It was amazing. Yeah. And she's happier. I'm happier. There's another funny joke we have because one time she came to visit and she looked at my grill, you know, the stovetop. I had a gas stove. And it was a mess. And she's like, wow, do you ever clean this? And I was like, okay, I have two choices here. One is to be totally offended. Like, who says that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And okay, like you're so much better or whatever. And I'm like, or my other choice is use this to my advantage because she loves to have something to do. So I said, oh, you know what? I actually saved that for you. Mm-hmm. I know how much you love to clean it. So she cleans it. So it's a running joke. Every time she visits, I literally don't clean my gas stove or stovetop for 2 weeks. So when she comes, I go, here you go. And we laugh and it's funny. So it's sort of like I'm using what I know about her and what we've to know that she needs to feel useful. She's always been so useful. You know, she had 7 kids and wrote a book. She's Teacher of the Year in Georgia. I mean, she's very accomplished. And the older someone gets, the less relevant they feel.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm thinking this is karma. I gotta be nice because one day I'm gonna be old and irrelevant too. And I want someone to be nice to me.
Yeah, we all do it. We all can't be I don't know. I'm trying to think of somebody who's still relevant when they're old. I mean, we can't all be Morgan Freeman, I suppose. Where his true relevance is the older he gets, the more everyone
the
loves
awesome-y him. The awesomer he sounds. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it's sort of really knowing and loving the person by meeting the need that they have. And you may say, well, her need is to spend all her time with my wife. And so you have to figure out, okay, what is actually the real need? Is it that she's clinging to something because there's a conversation that needs to be had or more love needs to be expressed or, you know, whatever it might be. So I think there's some ways of approaching it as the couple that can be helpful with the reality that there's only so much energy we have. There's only so much physical, emotional energy you have.
Yeah.
And if you want to build a successful relationship and a family and a life, it can't go to your in-laws.
No,
it can't.
No,
a little bit can here or there,
but you can do that tiny bit. You can do the whole, you know, your thing sounds like when I'm getting judged by my mother-in-law, I scream that I'm being judge hugged because she's hugging me and whispering judgments in my ear. And I make it a game. I make it funny. And she'll smile and hit me in the arm and send me on my way. It's so much better than a bunch of everybody clamping down and not wanting to go to the things to be with each other and thinking all these passive aggressive thoughts about each other all the time. Instead, there's this weird ripping off of a Band-Aid moment, but it's kind of funny and everyone's happier as a result. It seems like what you're arguing for is you've got to conserve that energy for the things that matter. And instead just look at it from a different angle. Like there's right. another way to deal with her. You know, we have a mutual sister-in-law who we all used to scratch our head and be irritated with because she would do just quirky, strange things. And we knew it was cultural, and she's from a different country and didn't know English when she came here and all this kind of stuff. But she did these weird things that at first we're like, what are you doing? Going through all my coupons for no reason or checking out every room of the house every time you come over. Like
telling all these strange us what we things. Like or don't like.
Yeah, what yeah. we like or don't like. And there came a time for me where I suddenly something clicked and I went, I'm doing this wrong. The way you do this is you embrace this freaking weirdness.
Yeah.
And you laugh about it. And by laughing about it, you kind of expose it a little bit too. And you kind of put it back on her without it being mean or argumentative. And now she's one of my favorite people in the family.
Right.
She makes me laugh because she's just who she is and there ain't no changing it. And it's so much fun to watch and to tease with her. And she's come around a lot as a result.
Yeah.
And my relationship with her, I could not be happier with. So it seems like there's opportunities in these rough in-law relationships to do that. You're going to have different pacing and it's going to be a longer haul. I mean, some of the stuff with my mother-in-law took me 15 years to figure out, but right. it's not impossible, you know?
Well, and that same sister-in-law, we mentioned this quite a bit because it is so funny. She one time was talking to Adam and she said, Adam, you're great, but I really loved Ryan.
It's such a weird honesty.
And on, yeah, about how he was so wonderful. Uh-huh. And she'd really wished I'd married him, but you're okay.
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, now I know how you see it. And she's lovely to him and there's nothing wrong. It's
no,
just,
it could have been, but you could help, have, he could have gone honest. A whole different way after that. He could have decided to be completely and entirely offended by again. That.
Right.
But
right.
instead, if you see it for the quirk that it is, it's kind of amazing. That she's right. even willing to say something like that.
Right. And it's also really refreshing because no one talks like that. It's sort of like, you know, but again, there's that lacing it with humor that's really important. Now, everyone be very clear. There's a difference between mockery and humor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to be really careful. You're not mocking the other person's family. And you'll know the line. You can see in your wife's face.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And then you sleep on the couch and you'll know, okay, I don't go there. Because again, not only are you blending these two families and everyone's different, you are blending cultures of communication that could be so vastly different that, you know, you're really going to be in trouble. Our family, it's very much about humor and, you know, joking about stuff and then talking about any topic we want.
Right.
Right. We can, you know, eat dinner and chat about abortion and then joke about a cartoon and then whatever, like that's all safe
yep.
in our. And that's not every family. I know in Adam's family, it's joking is really valued. Everyone's really funny. Everyone's great. But there are topics you do not go there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Kim's house. It's both. You can't be very funny and you can't, although you can, and you make her dad laugh because he laughs all the time, but you can't, there are topics you just can't freaking say. And some of them will seem completely innocuous and benign to people, but I'll bring things up and, oh, the freezer burn people get in that room.
Do you remember when I bought you a Homer Simpson kippah?
Yeah.
Or yarmulke.
Yeah, yarmulke.
Or
yeah.
kippah or whatever from Israel.
Israel, yeah. I loved it. It's not only is it a Homer, it's the Simpson thing, but it's completely a knockoff. It's like a total knockoff of the Simpsons. It's awesome.
Yeah. On a kippah, which I think sort of offended your mother-in-law to the core.
She was completely offended by it.
Yeah, because those are two things she probably hates.
But she didn't know what else to be offended by. She's not into Jews. She can't figure out how she feels about that. She's not, but then she kind of is because all her conservative talk show people are really into them. She sort of likes them. But then the fact that there's Simpsons paraphernalia all over a yarmulke, regardless
like
of her feeling about
it.
Yeah, sacrilegious, yeah. Even against a religion she has problems with. Like,
oh, I should have put it on a black guy. That would have made it better.
Even better, dude. Even better. Because she just, she struggles with those things. No, she has no idea. But even if she did, she knows she's got this stuff. And she's also got, she has some amazing, absolutely wonderful qualities. And I think that's kind of where we're trying to get with this. She's going to be different. She's going to be hard. She's going to be a challenge. You're going to be different, hard, and a challenge to her. The hard part is telling that that's happening, that you are also a challenge for her. And putting yourself in that empathetic state of understanding that you look like the intruder sometimes is a really important part of this equation. At least it is for me.
Yeah.
It's kind of the whole, you know, when a child realizes that when he's crying, not just he's hearing it, but that everyone is hearing it. Like there are other people here that are, you know, when your crowd awareness kicks in, it's kind of like what it happens with me. And my relationship with her has been so much better since I've tried to see some of this from her angle. And some of it is some deep seated, rooted in the deep, dark South stuff that will never go away.
Yeah.
But I understand that now. I understand both where it comes from, that it's super fused to her, and that it probably will never go away. And there's real freedom in that, because then you can just, you know, then you can find out what is funny about it or what isn't funny about it, or where you can go or where you can't go. And then, you know, also in turn, be so grateful for what you got on, you know, in return with the daughter. Kim would be considered the black sheep of that family.
Right.
Which is ridiculous.
We're into black sheep.
Which is ridiculous, because there is none. I know. There's no, if that's the black sheep, then where are the, I mean, the white sheep must be perfect.
Right. Because
the black sheep is already better than most people I know. But
they
but,
just don't talk back. We married people who talk back. A little bit.
They do. They taught, they were able, yes, they didn't just take it. I guess that's the difference between them and AKA the white sheep.
But well, anyway. And I found out something about my mother-in-law that's similar to this. When I really stop and listen to her and I really get to know her and find out where some of the needing to accomplish things comes from and the drive she has to always be so busy, is, you know, she mentioned this once to me. She said she lived away from her parents her whole married life, and her parents would come and visit and they didn't ever help her with anything. She had 7 kids, 5 flipping boys. Can you imagine the damage in a house?
Good gosh.
And they never helped. They just sort of like, take me on a tour of the city, or let's eat some food and your kids are loud. You know, so they're great people, but they just weren't real helpful. So when she comes to visit, she's like ready to rebuild your house. Like we have this funny story where I went to pick Pete up from the hospital and she had touch painted up my whole house. So I'm leaving and I'm like getting paint on my clothes. And I'm like, I got to get out of here. This is not good timing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's she's got to do a project and get something done. And it really is helpful. But sometimes I think she misses the point.
Yeah.
But it's because of this ancient feeling of I want to be useful when I'm at my grandchildren and children's house. So find out their history. I think that's sometimes really helpful. So I would sum this all up with. Shifting your perspective. The best way to shift your perspective is step in the other person's shoes. Find out what their history is. Find out where they came from. Find out their own relationship with their in-laws. You could see where some of the baggage might come from, right?
Yeah.
And then try to flip it on its head a little bit. Embrace whatever the weird thing is. Maybe see the humor in it. And then really, as a couple, sit down and talk about what your boundaries are. If you're newlywed, awesome, because you'll prevent a lot of stuff. If you've been married 20 years and it's still happening, sit down and talk about what is it from the angle of what is it we both want?
Yeah.
Because if you can always understand someone when you stop and say, what do they really want? Like a toddler who's throwing a fit is probably sleepy or hungry. If we just address the actual thing instead of the nonsense they're talking about, then they're going to get their needs met. But sometimes we act like toddlers and we throw fits when our real need is, I need some time, or maybe their love language. We've talked about this on the show before. Their love language is receiving gifts and you never buy them a dang thing. You say, well, you're a mother-in-law. You've had enough presents. You don't need anything. But that's maybe how they feel loved.
That might be the only way they've ever felt it or whatever.
Right. So it would be interesting to do a little motivational interviewing. You can Google that, everyone, with your in-laws and find out what is really driving any of the behavior that might be bugging you, or is there a neglect that they're feeling? So maybe it's that the car analogy. He just wants to test drive the car a little bit once in a while.
Just let him get behind the wheel, make sure you're taking care of it.
Give him a minute. Sure. Yeah. And that's when you can do little bits of energy as opposed to all the energy, a big drama, you know, stuff happens. But go, you better, everyone listening, promise me you will go see a therapist before you call your mother to complain about your partner.
Yeah,
please.
Don't do that. That's a real bad thing.
You can do this with friends and ruin that as well. But family, is family. Yeah. And you're going to make it, it's 10 times worse.
Well, I would agree 100%. And I would also tag onto the back of this. There is nothing quite like marrying off one of your own kids to fill you with a level of empathy for your in-laws and your own parents that you did not have previous to that moment.
Yeah.
And it was a really odd experience. I felt more close to both mom and my in-laws, my wife's parents that day than I have maybe my entire marriage. Right. And I don't know why suddenly that decided to spring on me, but suddenly I saw it through their eyes and realized, this was me not long ago. Is this how this felt? Because I didn't give them the proper credit for how this must have felt. And now I feel like I know. So try to get ahead of that before you get there. Maybe it's impossible. Maybe you have to get there to feel it. I don't know.
And that's possibly true, which is why it's sad we don't sort of value aging very much, because we don't, you know, when you're there, no one's listening to you. Where they see it.
I've also noticed that we don't start to realize how little we value aging until we start aging. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And then you say things like, youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah. Those phrases have never been uttered by a 22-year-old.
No, but near in 40, I'm like, oh no, that's a real thing. Totally they don't is. Even get it.
Yeah, they have no idea. And I had no idea. And no one will ever have any idea. This is the dance of life, everyone. So get used to it.
So to the woman who makes the delicious lemon cake, so please send me one to Sweden.
Oh, so good.
Secondly, try a little bit of what we said. Find out. Let your husband talk about his feelings about his mom and shut your mouth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Hear him. Listen to if he says, you know, I feel bad for her, or I don't want her to hurt, or think of, I mean, if you really get to the core, it's probably very loving and sensitive. Like he's protecting his mom, but you know what? You're the bully on the playground. Sometimes maybe you don't realize it, but he's at least acting like he's got a defender.
Sure.
So really hear him. And then the second thing is get to know her in a different way. Maybe shift your perspective of how she's talking, read something about her history, sort of get a different angle, and then get your ego out of it, right? This isn't a competition. You got her, son. You got the car.
Yeah.
You're driving around clumsily or whatever, but you got the car.
Right.
So just be nice about it. And, you know, and then if you're old and you're listening to this and you're an in-law, get a life.
Yeah.
Just improve your health, your marriage, do something. Do not let every waking minute be about your children and grandchildren. And I'm not saying you shouldn't care about them, love them, have a close relationship, but there's some balance.
Two very specific sides of the same coin, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. We only got 3 episodes left in the season. So we don't know what next week's topic is, but we'll let you guys know. Don't worry. We're getting there. 3 more. And then you've gotten what we promised. And then we'll see what happens after that. We don't know. We'll find out then. If you'd like to get the old episodes of the show, they're available at frogpants.com/therapy. They're all there to play, download, get the RSS feeds, iTunes subscriptions, elsewhere, whatever you need. It's all right there. We'll be back next time with more therapy for you, dear listener. Thanks, Wendy.
You're welcome.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.